Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday morning. It's June 11th. 42 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly sunny skies. Heber City reporting 47 degrees at the airport. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Thursday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch back on this Thursday. We've got lots of sunshine on the way after a chilly start. With temperatures in the 30s this morning, we'll see those numbers rebounding to near 70 this afternoon in Park City. Definitely below average. We'll see those high temperatures only in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into Friday, high pressure will send another surge of heat our way. So heading into the weekend, yeah, it's going to warm back up. So your Friday temperatures will be climbing close to 80 in Park City with lots of sunshine. We'll see those high temperatures climbing back into the mid-80s as we get towards the Heber Valley for your Friday afternoon. We'll stay that way as we go into your Saturday. Highs in the low 80s in Park City with lots of sunshine. We'll see those highs in the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. Moving into your Sunday, we'll call it mostly sunny skies. Temperatures will jump into the upper 70s to near 80 for a high. We'll be in the mid-80s for highs as we look into the Heber Valley. Next week, we've got a stronger ridge of high pressure that will settle into the area. So we'll start the week on Monday with lots of sunshine. High temperatures climbing to around 80 degrees for a high temperature in Park City with highs in the mid-80s in the Heber Valley. Tuesday, we'll see a few degrees added to those numbers. So we're looking at highs in the low 80s for us in Park City with that sunshine returning. We'll see highs on Tuesday afternoon in the upper 80s in the Heber Valley with plenty of sunshine. And by the time we get towards the middle of next week, yes, still looking dry, sadly, lots of sunshine. Those temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 80s for highs in Park City. We'll have those highs in the low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley. So that's going to be some real summer-like heat that's going to build in by the middle of next week. As far as any precipitation chances go, there will be a slim chance. We're talking less than 10% chance for your Saturday and Sunday for isolated dry thunderstorm, which would mainly produce lightning and gusty winds. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned in just a minute. We'll be checking in with Summit County Council member Megan McKenna, taking a look back at yesterday's meeting. Park City Elks Club members Lisa Schneider and Craig Cooper with details on the Community Flag Day ceremony happening Saturday at the Senior Center, and Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang with a preview of some upcoming screenings. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio, a check-in with NASA scientist Dominic Bedford for a behind-the-scenes look at NASA's Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope before it launches in September. Learn how this first-of-its-kind observatory will map the universe one panoramic frame at a time. Then digital illusionist and tech magician Keelan Lacer talks about his new book, Unseen, Blind Spots and Why We Miss What Matters Most. He highlights gaps in our perception that lead to everyday errors in our life. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, of course, heard every Thursday from 9 to 10. Taking a look at some local news now, Summit County is considering changing the Dakota Pacific Development Agreement to add space for local nonprofits. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the Kimball Arts Center and others are interested.
Six Bridge Partners, formerly Dakota Pacific, is asking the county to add 50,000 square feet to its Kimball Junction development. 30,000 are for the Kimball Arts Center's new headquarters west of the former Skullcandy building, which will become the Kimball Junction Library. Councilmember Candace Hart indicated at the council's Wednesday meeting that the Park City Chamber of Commerce is exploring the possibility of a 10,000 square foot facility elsewhere in the project area. The other 10,000 could be a nonprofit center operated by the Park City Community Foundation, he says. Scott says the parties will share more details at a public informational meeting about Six Ridge's request Tuesday, June 16th at 6 p.m. in the Sheldon Richens building.
The development agreement, as you remember, is an administrative development agreement, so it's not going to go to the council, so it's only sitting on my desk. But the council and I felt like there was a need to raise this to the public, let them know that this is happening.
The Utah legislature passed the law last year to make sure the controversial development, now dubbed Altus Park City, would happen. That law is the reason only Scott, as county manager, can amend that agreement with Six Ridge. He tells KPCW he's waiting until after the Tuesday public meeting to make a decision, but it won't be long after that.
We need to give Six Ridge the kind of the direction on whether or not these buildings will be accommodated in the DA, because they need to tell our consultants and the architects, and they need to plan for it. So there's a lot of details left to decide.
The county website says the Tuesday meeting will include a light meal. Scott says he expects Six Ridge to ask for other development agreement amendments in the future. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In the studio now with a recap of yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Councilmember Megan McKenna. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's real quick about this development agreement change for the former Dakota Pacific, now Six Ridge Partners. That's strictly a county manager decision. Did council give any input, though, on it?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's an administrative amendment that is required. Six Ridges came to the county, and of course our county manager came to the council to seek guidance on that. Ultimately, it is his decision, but of course he would like the support and direction from the council.
Yeah. So when does the council take it up?
We won't. I mean, that's really the idea for this open house. This is why we wanted to hold this, because it is an administrative decision. We wanted the public to see. And so next Tuesday at 6 o'clock at Richens, we'll have the Six Ridge Partners will be there, along with some of the other nonprofit partners in the community that are interested in that space. And that's really an opportunity for us to share with the community what potential, you know, we could have there with the Kimball Arts Center. We've heard a lot about that's the majority of the additional square footage, but there's other opportunities too, potentially a visitor center or nonprofit hub. Really those are not confirmed yet, but I think just getting some feedback from the public, and I think the council can weigh in then too.
Okay, so this meeting will be noticed since more than three council members may show up, or?
You know, that I'm actually not aware if that's the case or not.
Okay. Let's see. Scott Van Hartesveld, Director of Leadership Park City, stopped by to debrief this year's program, Class 32, and the city tour. He mentioned that he wants to expand participation on the county's east side. So is there an appetite for that?
Oh, absolutely. This actually came up in our COG meeting. The last COG meeting, several of the mayors were not aware of the Park City Leadership Program. And so I think this is a great opportunity to expand the program across the county. We did have a lot of participation this year with staff from the other side of the county. And so I think there's a lot of interest.
Okay, so I'm surprised it's been going on for more than 30 years and they didn't know about it.
Yeah, it was surprising to us as well. So good opportunity to continue to spread the word about what leadership does and how we can include more across the county.
Okay, so what were your takeaways? You were a participant from Vail and Breckenridge this year.
Oh yeah, what a great city tour. There was really so much to see. I really enjoyed our visit in Breckenridge. The strategic planning that they're doing, we got to participate in. They had a town cleanup day along the river, and that was ahead of our Trails, Trash, and Tunes event here, so that was cool to see how they organized that. Their Performing Arts Center is just beautiful. We got to tour arts and their arts and culture campus. They have a visitor center right in the heart of town within walking distance that really does a lot of visitor education around sustainability and also includes a history museum. So that was really neat to see. Of course, seeing our former county manager, Tom Fisher, the city manager of Frisco, is always really great to see him. He was on a panel talking about regional collaboration. One of the highlights that I heard from a lot of participants was the Colorado Mountain College put on a culinary demonstration and just really, really great presentation from one of their award-winning chefs, and local restaurants came out to talk about the value of restaurants and not only to our local economy, but in building community. So so much, and really just a shout out to the team, to Scott and Paige that put the city tour together. But really, I was so impressed with the leadership class, and heard a lot of great feedback from staff members, from the city and the county that were able to attend as well. So really, really great tour.
All right. Vail town officials touted its West Lineheads development with Vail Resorts. Does it remind you of any projects we've got here locally?
Yeah, sure. I think there were, you know, a lot of parallels that we can draw with Vail and Breckenridge and their relationships with the resort. I think challenges, of course, but also, opportunities to how to move through those difficult times.
Yeah, in terms of any similar collaboration, is there to be had with Deer Valley or Park City?
Oh yeah, I think there's always an opportunity, to improve those relationships. Our resorts are important partners to the city and to the county, and I think we're always looking for ways to grow and work together. And I think that's an important one.
Yeah. So what was the what was the big deal about West Lineshead development? I mean, it was a Vail Resorts development, or? The importance, the significance of that.
They really didn't talk a whole lot about that. And I think that was one of the criticisms, too, of the city tour, is it would have been nice to hear a little bit more about that challenge. And so I really can't speak more to that.
All right. The council yesterday approved the first ever grants from the Emergency Services Sales Tax. This is the tax that voters approved last year. All six applicants got some funding this year, but only eight organizations qualified to apply.
Yes, that's really just how the Emergency Services Sales Tax is set up. Eight are qualified to apply, but six did this round.
Okay, so who's the grant for? It looks like just government agencies then, huh?
Any organization or agency, not necessarily government, that is impacted by tourism and that provides emergency services. That is search and rescue, fire, police, sheriff, and public works. In addition, solid waste.
Okay, well, so the money that was granted didn't represent all of the money that was raised by the tax. Some of that apparently goes directly to emergency organization or the programs like you mentioned, waste management. So why not boost those budget items as opposed to saving money on the side for a grant?
I think the idea is really to do both, and that's when, you know, I wasn't on the council when this tax was approved, but I think that's how it was sold to the community, that it would cover these tourist impacts and help support emergency services, and that a small portion of it would be available for a grant program, too.
Yeah. So was there any thought to adjust how much of the sales tax would go toward the grant pot versus the general fund?
Yeah, that was part of the initial discussion, and I think 5% is what we initially allocated for this first round. And as we go into our budget talks, I think that's definitely a topic that will come up if that needs to be adjusted.
Okay. Let's see. The council received an email from J.C. Diston at North Summit Recreation. Their restaurant grant application went unfunded, and she's asking the council to reconsider. Is that something you can do?
Yeah, it is something that we can do. We as the policymaker, can revisit ordinances. And so this is something that Councilmember Hansen brought up last night, and I do support revisiting that. And I think it's just a great time, I think, in general in the county for us with a new grants coordinator, Katie Madsen, that was hired recently. I think just to talk about have that discussion about our grants programs and what we can do. Some of these programs are, you know, several years old, that maybe it's time, especially with the new grants coordinator, to look at how we allocate these funds and if there's any updates needed or any adjustments or best practices that have changed over the years in terms of how we allocate the funds.
Okay, so what are the next steps for JC's request specifically?
Yeah, it'll have to be placed on the agenda, and that's something that our Council Chair Hart and our county manager will work on to see where we can fit that in, and that of course would be a public discussion. No decisions were made last night. It was just mentioned that it was something that we would like to revisit and maybe see if there's other opportunities to support North Summit Recreation.
Yeah, do you know how much her request was for originally?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I think it was significant. I want to say $350,000. So I think we would, you know, look to fund a portion of that so that they could continue working on that. But again, that would require a discussion with the council and the majority to support that.
What was it for?
For lighting for their fields.
All right. If you, in fact, find that you do want to fund this after all, does that mean that the awardees who are counting on money will have money taken away from them, or where does the money come from?
That's a good question, and that's something that we'll have to discuss as a council and with our attorney and county manager to see what options are available.
All right. You had mentioned last week that the mobile crisis outreach teams in the Wasatch Back are now available on weekends. Can you just share a little bit more about what MCOT is and how that service has expanded?
Yeah, this is a partnership. In my role on council, I serve on the Board of Health and the Behavioral Health Executive Committee. And so I've gotten to see more into these partnerships that we have throughout the community. And the MCOT, or Mobile Crisis Outreach Team, is, as you mentioned, is a tremendous resource that we have in the county, that there were some gaps, and now we are able to provide 24-hour service 7 days a week on holidays. By dialing 988 or 911, you can access the crisis outreach team, and that's something that we have available throughout the county, and is something that we're really proud of, and it's important.
Does it include Wasatch County as well?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I know a lot of our services we do contract with Wasatch County as well, but I'm not sure about MCOT.
Okay, so who funds and runs MCOT? Is it a county health?
This is through a contract with the county, and so those details would probably be best answered either through Dr. Phil Bondurant or Aaron Newman, our Behavioral Health Executive Director.
Okay. So again, you say to call MCOT would be 988. I guess, would a resident call MCOT opposed to the police if they have a mental health related concern that doesn't rise to a level of criminal or potentially dangerous? I mean,
yeah, that's the idea with the 988, the hotline, the mental health hotline that anyone can call at any time, and even if you're not sure if it requires a crisis outreach team, that is the number to call. But as I mentioned, if you dial 911 and if it's identified as a mental health crisis, then they would dispatch that as well.
Okay. Finally, the Summit County Housing Authority meets Monday, which you flagged for the public. I mean, what would you, I guess, you know, what is it that you'd like to see the public attend to give public comment on?
I really just to raise awareness about what we're doing, and that it is a public meeting. It's next Monday at 1 o'clock in the Richens building. We have a lot on the agenda. It's all posted on the website, just like our county council agendas. And this week we'll be looking at the strategic plan, which they're hoping to present to the county council, I believe, on the 24th, at the end of this month. And so it's still in draft form, and we're still looking to get feedback. But that's a big portion of it. We also are talking about sustainability in housing. So we have a presentation from our sustainability director, Emily Quinton. There's always a public comment available. In addition, we have our speaker series, our ongoing speaker series. And this next one will be on the 22nd. That's a Monday? Yeah, Monday, the 22nd at Mountain Regional Water, 5:30 to 7:30. And this speaker series is focusing on housing and open space. So we have a really great panel. We're really excited to have that discussion.
Okay, Megan, anything else?
You know, I'd just like to say I had the opportunity to attend the Park City High School graduation. My nephew graduated last Friday. Deer Valley hosted, and it was just a really great ceremony that reminded me, you know, why I ran for council. I ran on a future forward program agenda to really think about the future of our community. And as I watched all of the graduates walk across that stage there, it just reminded me why I am interested in this work. And so just a big congratulations to all of our 2026 graduates across the Wasatch back. Of course, we have three districts in Summit County, and just a big congratulations to all our high school graduates.
Okay, Megan, thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
That's Summit County Councilmember Megan McKenna. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. The community is invited to the annual Flag Day ceremony this Saturday. It's put on every year by the Park City Elks Lodge, number 734. In the studio with details, I have Elks members Lisa Schneider and Craig Cooper. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie. Good morning. How are you?
So I'm doing great. So who wants to tell us, start by telling us who the Elks are and what it is you do?
Well, we are a charitable organization that's strictly American, and we've been continuously operating our building since 1922. We were chartered in 02, but even before that, we were here in the 1800s, not as a formal lodge, but as a group of Elks. They helped start the Glenwood Cemetery, fund it, and put it together. So, our charities are veterans and veterans affairs. We have the largest scholarship program in the country outside of the school system. We have the largest athletic program outside of the school system with our hoop shoot. And we focus on local needs as well.
Yeah, so where does all this money come from?
we raise money as a group, as a lodge. We raised over $100,000 last year donating strictly to local charities, including Meals on Wheels for seniors. We have a really nice list here that Cheryl gave us. Where did that go, Craig?
Peace House, Christian Center, Holy Cross Ministries, the museum, of course, in Glenwood Cemetery, youth scholarships, and lots of veterans activities, including taking them to ball games and setting up welcome kits and so forth at the Veterans Hospital down in Salt Lake. But our major state project is something called Camp Wapiti out in Tooele, and that's for kids with serious or life-threatening illnesses, and their families can come and romp around with the medical staff on there and share their experiences with other families facing the same challenges.
Yeah. Well, so again, I see you give away a lot of money, but where does the money come from? Just individual members?
Yeah. Yeah. So we hold events, and the events are, let's just say they're parties. We have a really good time together, and all the members and their guests donate. We also donate of our time and our talents, and last year we donated over 5,000 volunteer hours.
All right. How many members do you have?
Almost 300.
Okay.
I think at this point. Yeah. Right. We're growing. We're a growing lodge, and it's a very engaging community with many, many volunteer opportunities, and everybody feels like they want to give back.
Yeah. So you've got the beautiful lodge on Main Street, which is just pretty amazing, right? That it's still there. How often are the Elks in that building? Because I know the bottom floor, retail, of course.
Yeah, we meet twice a month unless there's an event in between. So we meet every other Thursday for a social hour and then our regular meeting.
All right. And it was one of the popular locations for Sundance Film Festival, which probably brought in some of the money that you're able to give out. So
True. How
do you replace that?
We've been doing more fundraisers, and I might mention that the Elks National Organization gives back about 150% of whatever we donate to them. So we've had some fundraisers to donate not only to local charities and so forth, but also to the Elks National Organization.
All right. Well, then tell us a little bit about this year's Flag Day ceremony. And I mean, guess what can people expect if they were to attend at the Senior Center?
Well, we will begin at 11, and it is open to the community. It is free, no cost. The ceremony itself will take about an hour. What we're doing is we're celebrating the history of the American flag. And so you'll have a chance to actually see replicas of eight American flags from between 1775 to present, including our nation's first flag. The ninth flag is the POW-MIA flag. And so that process gives everybody a chance to learn about the history of these flags. And then followed by lunch, and lunch is provided by the cabin and delicious pies from Aunt Em's.
All right, so I'm guessing you're asking people to RSVP or you're
nope,
just
nope,
figure
just,
it out?
Just show up. There will be music is provided by Bruce Music. So we'll be singing the Star Spangled Banner, America the Beautiful, and This Land is Your Land. I am the lodge vocalist, so I'll be singing. Bruce is helping to play guitar, and we're excited about that.
All right. Parking, of course, is always an issue in Old Town, so what do you recommend?
Yeah, ride your bike. It should be a gorgeous day. Ride your bike, take the bus, walk if you live nearby. Parking would be wherever you can find it, the street, over by the library, and
carpool
so on.
If you can.
Yep, carpool.
Okay. Yeah. And why is it important, then, for the Elks Lodge to kind of host this ceremony every year?
The Elks were actually instrumental in the designation of Flag Day as a national holiday. Started as a tradition with Elks well before it became a national holiday. Woodrow Wilson, I think, was an Elk, and we encouraged him to designate it as national holiday, and I think Harry Truman actually did that in
1949. Yeah, and it was signed by a joint resolution of Congress declaring June 14th as the national observance of Flag Day.
Okay, and I guess what's the significance of Flag Day?
It's, it's really to recognize, I think everybody might have their own lens on the American flag throughout time, and it's an opportunity to recognize our history and the many, many different iterations of the growth and evolution of our country, and the flag representing those iterations across time. And so we're going to be recognizing that. It's a patriotic event.
And I guess at a time when the country seems so divided, I mean, I guess what message do you hope this ceremony sends?
Well, that we are the United States of America.
Yeah, I love that question, Leslie. Exactly what Craig said, that we are the United States. And what's the thing about being an imperfect union? It's an imperfect process. And here we are.
Okay, so anything new or different planned then for this year's event, other than the history of the flags?
Live music.
Okay. Yep. All right, anything else you want to let us know about it?
Well, we encourage everybody to come. Everybody is welcome. And we look forward to celebrating the history of our country and the United States of America.
Okay, Lisa, anything you want to add?
Great. Just come out and join us. Thanks so much, Leslie.
Okay, Lisa Schneider and Craig Cooper with the Park City Elks Lodge. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, residents will have another chance to comment on Park City Mayor and City Council raises today. KPCW's Christine Weller reports the council is revisiting their decision to double their salaries after public outrage.
Many locals were critical of the Park City Council's May decision to more than double councilor and mayor salaries for fiscal year 2027. The feedback prompted a unanimous decision to revisit the raises Thursday. City Manager Adam Lenhard said city staff will provide the council with alternative compensation recommendations. There will also be another opportunity for public input.
We've attempted to implement a number of different methodologies that the council could look at. Where it gets really tricky is there's no single standardized methodology for implementing council pay. It's entirely a political decision by the council.
Staff reviewed several data points to provide an alternative recommendation, including the Consumer Price Index. CPI measures inflation by calculating the average change over time in prices paid by urban consumers. According to CPI, growth in the Mountain West, Colorado, and Mountain Plains regions, staff report adjusted pay for counselors would range from almost $33,000 to nearly $36,000. That's compared to current council member salaries of $29,000. When staff considered growth based on average staff salary since 2014, council pay would be between $36,000 and almost $38,000. Finally, when cost of living adjusted compensation and homeownership affordability were factored in, council salaries would be around $44,000.
Ultimately, they have to cast their vote and decide what is both financially feasible, you know, can the budget support it, and then what's politically acceptable. And I think what has been agreed upon so far is that doubling pay was not politically acceptable.
Staff also noted the mayor has typically received a salary nearly two times higher than council members, but this can change. Outside of cost of living adjustments, neither the council nor the mayor has seen a pay increase since fiscal year 2015. As initially proposed, the raises would bring Park City's compensation rates in line with the council's Summit County counterparts. Summit County councilors got a pay bump in December 2025, raising salaries from $61,000 to $70,000 per year. The council is expected to alter councilor and mayor salaries before the final fiscal year 2027 budget is approved June 25th. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, Deer Valley Resort will charge for access to downhill mountain bike terrain this year, even for riders who don't ride the chairlift. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on the pedal pass.
Passes are $50 for the summer season or $12 per day to get pedal access to Deer Valley Resort's downhill mountain bike trails. That's as opposed to bike hall season passes, which go for a few hundred dollars. Doug Gormley, Deer Valley's lead mountain bike coach, says the new pedal pass is designed to offset the cost to maintain highly trafficked flow trails.
A lot of people ride the bus, come in, they pedal in to certain areas of the bike park. So it is really to access the bike park trails. And again, those are the ones that cost an enormous amount of money to build and maintain.
The pedal pass only covers lift-served terrain on Bald and Bald Eagle Mountains. It doesn't include trails on Flagstaff Mountain or multi-directional trails like Mid-Mountain. Gormley says riders will encounter signs asking them to buy either the season or day pass as they enter the bike park area. It includes a liability waiver as well.
So when you come into certain areas of the bike park to access downhill only trails, you'll actually go through some fencing, and it's asking for some help with, again, just these trails that people love to ride.
Gormley says e-bikes are welcome in the Deer Valley Bike Park. Deer Valley Resort is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
On the phone now with an update from Park City Film, I have Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so what have you got coming up?
Well, we've got a great program of films coming up this summer. This is the first time in our 32-year history that we are bringing films to the big screen during the summer months, which we're really thrilled about. And we've got films ranging from the continuation of our weekend film series to partnership screenings with sister nonprofits that include special guests and, of course, outdoor films because it's summertime. But tonight we're kicking things off with a special screening as part of the Latino Arts Festival. We're presenting American Pachuco, The Legend of Luis Valdez. Luis Valdez has used his art over the course of his career to give voice to Mexican Americans and the Chicano community through his very famous El Teatro Campesino Theater Company, the film La Bamba, and play Zoot Suit. American Pachuco premiered here at the Sundance Film Festival in 2026, winning the Audience Award as well as the Audience Favorite Award. The film will be shown in Spanish and English with Spanish subtitles. Film showtime is 7 o'clock tonight, and admission is free. We have had lots of interest in the film because it is exceptional, so please register in advance if you have the opportunity. But of course, we've got a great theater, so come on down if you want to join us. And then this weekend, our feature film is the new documentary about the musician Jack Johnson, Surf Film Music. I saw the premiere of this film at South by Southwest. I did not catch him live in Austin, which I'm bummed about, but I knew it would be perfect for Park City this summer. This film depicts Johnson's journey from surfer to filmmaker to world-renowned musician, and just really does a beautiful job of capturing the community and friendships that have inspired his music. If you're a fan of surfing, if you're a fan of Jack Johnson's music, if you are new to Jack Johnson, this is definitely a must-see film in the theaters on the big screen. It's really fun. So that'll be showing Friday and Saturday at 7, and then again on Sunday at 6 o'clock. And we want to thank PJ Builders, Inc. for helping us get that film here to our community. Then the following weekend, we have one of my favorite films from the film festival circuit this year, which is Tuner, which stars Dustin Hoffman and Leo Woodall. This is a heist thriller about a piano tuner who turns into a safe cracker, goes over to the dark side. It's an incredible story, incredible acting, just an all-around fantastic independent film. That'll be June 19th through 21st. And then we're really excited to be doing something a little bit different this summer, since it's our first summer really showing films in a concentrated way. And we have, at the end of June, the America the Beautiful film series. And this is June 26th through 28th. And it's a collection of four documentaries that celebrate and showcase the diversity of the American experience as we celebrate 250 years since the signing of the Declaration of Independence. All the films will have director Q&As or panel discussions after them, because there's so much to talk about, as you will hear in a minute. Friday night, we have Natchez, which is a story of the legacy of slavery and how that history is being told in the South in the present day. Saturday, we've got two films. Our matinee screening is Remaining Native, about a young Native American runner who's honoring his grandfather's experience and the generational trauma from the Indian boarding schools. Our evening film on Saturday is Third Act, about the legacy of Robert Nakamura, who is the godfather of Asian American cinema, who's also a survivor of the Manzanar Japanese internment camp in Central California. And then we round everything out on Sunday with Give Me the Ball, a film that premiered at Sundance this year about the life and legacy of tennis player Billie Jean King, who of course was an advocate, or is an advocate, for women, LGBTQ+ rights, just an incredible human being, and we thought would be a great way to capstone that series. So four different films, four different tickets, again, Q&As with directors for all of those. So really excited to be having to be premiering that series this year. And then finally, one special screening this month. Our first outdoor screening of the year will be on Thursday, June 18th. We'll be out at the Colville Fairgrounds showing Zootopia 2, which was nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Feature. Thanks to our partnership with North Summit Unite and Summit County Health, there'll be free food trucks from 5 to 7 p.m. Then the film is at 7 because it's on an LED screen, so we can start early before it gets dark. So bring your blankets, chairs, friends, family. Coming out for a great, great film under the stars.
Okay, so with your first summer, I mean, is there any rhyme or reason to the summer schedule, or what's the plan?
Yeah, so June is kind of, you know, fairly traditional. I mean, other than the America the Beautiful film series, where it's, you know, showing four different films over the course of the weekend. Once we get into July, we'll take a break for July 4th. And then it's a lot of partnership screenings. We're partnering with Ballet West for a special screening. We're really excited, although details to come. We'll be partnering with Sundance on the Local Lens series this summer. So we'll have some films from the festival coming back to our community. So July is a little bit more kind of special screenings, more of what we would traditionally do on a Thursday evening, where we've got speakers and talent coming in. But again, with partnerships with other nonprofits, either kind of real community or Raising Voices, kind of helping to elevate their mission through film. And then August, we'll be back to kind of a more traditional weekend series. So it's a little bit looking at, you know, what's happening in our community this summer. It's so busy, so many events going on. You know, we want to certainly, you know, add film to that schedule of events, but also being cognizant of, like, July 4th. Clearly, that's not going to be a great weekend to bring people into downtown Park City to come see a movie. So, you know, just kind of working with the reality of what's going on around us and trying to, you know, to help supplement areas where maybe there's less activity. And just, again, you know, film, independent cinema has not really been part of that summer calendar. So just kind of see how it all fits in. And, you know, this is our first summer, so it was a little bit of an experiment of what will happen in 27.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering. I mean, is this some kind of pilot program, or, I mean, is the intent to make sure that you do have independent film during the summer months going forward?
I mean, the plan is absolutely to continue it going forward. I mean, with the loss of the Sundance Film Festival, we're amplifying our programming by 54%, and summer programming is certainly a part of that. I think it's important that we have a space for independent film year-round and kind of have these kind of bonfires of activity, these sparks of creativity throughout the year. And summer is a great time for film. There are a lot of great films that come out. You know, most of them were kind of the popcorn blockbuster type films, but there's certainly a place for independent film that we haven't, you know, heretofore taken advantage of. So it's kind of fun to play with that a little bit and just kind of see what resonates with people, what types of films, maybe not dark French dramas, right? Maybe something like Jack Johnson is a little more compatible with what people are thinking about in the summertime. But no, the plan is absolutely going forward to continue to program year round. What that looks like in the summer just might be a little different than what it looks like from September through June.
Okay. Anything else you want to let us know about?
Just parkcityfilm.org. Please check out our calendar. As I said, June is kind of a more traditional schedule, except for the America the Beautiful series. Amazing films, director Q&As with all of those films, or a panel. So please sign up for those films in advance. You know, put a placeholder out there for the Sundance Local Lens on July 19th. That'll be a Sunday. And then tonight, American Pachuco, just such a beautiful film. You know, we love showcasing these great films from the film festival circuit and just bring our community together through film. So appreciate everyone's support and come on out and see some great films with us.
Okay. Katie Wang is the Executive Director of Park City Film. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Well, the winner of the Sundance Film Festival's Social Impact Award, The Lake, is proving to be an important tool in efforts to save the Great Salt Lake. A Monday screening of the film is sold out, but two more are planned in the coming weeks. Utah filmmaker Abby Ellis premiered The Lake at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It examines the environmental decline of the Great Salt Lake and the people fighting to reverse it.
The film is about an environmental nuclear bomb here in Utah known as the Great Salt Lake, which is drying up. And the lake bed is full of toxic materials such as arsenic and lead and other material that we don't even know yet. The film follows a handful of people from science to politics working to not only better understand this crisis, but also how they can stop it before it takes off.
Monday screening will be the film's first public showing since its Sundance debut. Ella says that one of the biggest lessons she learned while making the documentary is that this crisis is human-caused and can be reversed if leaders choose to act.
It's exacerbated by climate change, but the number one driver for this is human consumption and mismanagement of this precious resource. Agriculture uses a significant amount of water. Municipalities use a significant amount of water, as well as industries across the state. It's not that their water use has increased necessarily, though some buckets of that have. It's more just that we've been using, you know, significant water that otherwise would get to the lake. We've been diverting it for our own use for so long that it's having a pretty dramatic impact.
She says the film is already helping generate momentum for conservation efforts.
We're seeing significant dollars get raised for lake conservation, which is really exciting. And I think the population is starting to get a bit more engaged on the issue as well.
The screening is set for Monday at 7 o'clock at the Park City Eccles Center. It'll be followed by a Q&A with the filmmakers and those working to save the Great Salt Lake, including the nonprofit Grow the Flow, which wants to turn the decline of the Western Hemisphere's largest saline lake into a success story. Ellis says two additional screenings are set for July in both Salt Lake City and Park City. Well, the Marsac Roundabout in Park City will receive a permanent traffic light this summer. The change comes after state transportation officials tested a temporary light over the last 2 years. KPCW's Christine Weller has more.
The Utah Department of Transportation will install a permanent traffic signal this summer on the Marsac Roundabout, which intersects Marsac Avenue, Deer Valley Drive, and the Old Town Transit Center. The signal is designed to slow southbound Deer Valley Drive traffic and prioritize city buses during peak times. The state agency tested the system during the 2024 to 2025 and 2025 to 2026 winters. Deputy Park City Manager Heather Sneddon said there were previously issues with circulating buses.
A lot of times, given the heavy traffic that's headed north through that roundabout, the buses are not able to exit the Old Town Transit Center in a timely fashion.
UDOT considered the pilot a success. Bus times and overall traffic flow improved. Park City and UDOT collaborated on a design for the permanent signal. It will be mounted on black sign poles rather than a large mast arm over the roadway like in the pilot. Yield and stop here signs will also be incorporated into the signal. During the pilot, a police officer manually operated the signal. Now it will be fully automated.
The purpose of this permanent transit signal will really be just to identify when a bus is queued to enter into the roundabout. And when that happens, the signal will turn on and allow the bus to actually enter the roundabout without having to wait for the through traffic that's headed north.
The Park City Council approved an agreement June 4th to contribute $160,000 to the project. The money will also support another UDOT project to install fiber optic cables along Deer Valley Drive. The signal installation is expected to start in late June and be completed in late August. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, the presence of federal immigration agents in Summit County is affecting crime reporting and children's access to food. That's what Summit County Council hopefuls told voters at a recent candidate forum. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more.
Summit County Council District 5 covers Jeremy Ranch, most of Pinebrook, and Summit Park. Park City School Board member Meredith Reed is challenging incumbent Canis Hart in this month's Democratic primary. Amid a national immigration crackdown, both candidates shared the impact of immigration and customs enforcement on daily life in Summit County. Reed says the school district is seeing fewer applications for free and reduced cost lunch.
Families are afraid to make the application to get their kids fed. We have children who graduated last year that their parents had been taken away just the week before. We have kids that are scared to come to school.
She says ICE has not entered Park City schools. Hart is a deputy and search and rescue operations manager for the Summit County Sheriff's Office.
I was just out at a job site in Silver Creek Village. Someone's tools were stolen, and there was a dispute. And when I went out to speak with the individuals and trying to get the information to figure out what had happened, their main concern was that they had ICE meetings coming up. And so they didn't want to file the report.
Hart's worried about the harm and, quote, predatory behavior Latino residents might see if they're fearful of filing police reports. In the past, ICE has notified Summit County and Park City authorities when it plans to operate in their area. The federal agency does not require their permission. Neither candidate offered specific strategies for how Summit County should work with or respond to ICE enforcement. Their comments came at a candidate forum Monday, hosted by KPCW and the Park Record. Ahead of the June 23rd primary election, voters in District 4 covering the central Snyderville Basin are also choosing between two Democrats. And with no Republicans or write-ins running in either race, the Democratic primary is likely to decide those elections in both districts. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Summit County kids can earn their ATV safety certification with the Sheriff's Department at a free course this Saturday. KPCW's Sydney Weaver has more.
Utah law requires ATV drivers under 18 years old to pass an educational safety course before hitting the trails. To help young drivers, the Summit County Sheriff's Office has partnered with the Division of Natural Resources to host a free course. Sheriff's Office spokesperson Skylar Talbot says the first class is June 13th.
One of our patrol sergeants is actually certified to instruct this course through the state. So, again, Summit County hosting it, but it is a state-ran program. And so we're actually going to have hopefully three or four of these classes throughout the summer.
Participants must bring their own properly sized ATV and safety gear, including helmets, goggles, gloves, long sleeves, pants, and boots. The course is June 13th from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Summit County Fairgrounds in Colville. A link to register is available at kpcw.org. Sydney Weaver, KPCW News.
The South Summit Trails Foundation is ramping up its bike park offerings for the 2026 season with new features at the Oakley Trail Park. The park's first phase was built in 2018 and included a network of 10 trails on the east side of Pinyon Lane. Over the past 14 months, more trails were added west of the road. The foundation also built a pavilion with restrooms, drinking fountains, a pump track, dual lines, steel courses, and more. Foundation Vice President Howard Sorensen says the group also helped revamp the east side of the road with improved berms and features.